Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Hi everyone, I'm John Verhoeven, and I was a cop back in Sydney in the 80s.
And I'm Paul Verhoeven, I'm John's son. I'm an author and I wrote two books about Dad's time as a cop. This season, The Shadow Files has us visiting the locations of Australia's most notorious crimes and looking at what happened there.
This season of Loose Units is your go-to guide to the worst crimes in Australian true crime history.
Loose Units, The Shadow Files. Tune in every week wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Loose Units, The Shadow Files. I'm Paul Verhoeven, that's John Verhoeven, and Dad and I haven't actually done a brand new episode of The Shadow Files in a couple of months, and we are very, very excited to be back, and today we are looking at a Netflix documentary which has been buzzing online recently. It's called The Hatchet-Wielding Hitchhiker. Dad, had you ever heard of this case before we watched this?
Paul, first, hi.
Hi.
To the new season.
Yeah, hello.
Even though it's... No, you're not the new season.
No, it's technically... Well, technically it's the same old season, but it's just a new
bit. It's exciting.
It's great.
And yeah. It's 2023.
It is. God help
which
us.
Which is absolutely... You know, we're all heading towards... God knows. Oh, God. A dystopian future.
As we hurtle towards the abyss, how's everyone doing? Yeah, I know.
Well, apart from the abyss, when you mentioned this to me...
Mm.
I'd never heard of this particular story. And it happened weirdly. In fact, 10 years ago, virtually to the day.
Pretty much. February 2nd, 2013 was when this video hit. And I don't remember it happening at the time, by the way. Do you?
No,
do you remember?
No recollection. I mean, I'd remember, definitely, the case. I feel that social media, I mean, Paul, what was the social media scene 10 years ago?
It was pretty spare. I mean, I remember being online at the time. Obviously, you know, the documentary covers all sorts of stuff, and it really does cover how mainstream media, not mainstream media, like traditional terrestrial media like television, was trying to capitalize on internet phenomenon. And that was... Mm. That was something that was happening a lot at the time. I was very online in 2013. In fact, Steampunks had just come out and Twitter was very big at the time. YouTube was huge. And every once in a while, a meme would come out and it would go absolutely berserk. I don't remember this one, partly because it seems to have been very America-centric. But I guess my main... Look, the main sticking point for me here is, first of all, if you haven't watched the documentary, you don't have to watch it. I think some people... For some people, our talk about it might actually scratch the itch and mean they don't need to. And I don't think that'd be a bad thing. But I would like to start with the core of this case, which is, Dad, how do you feel when there is a crime in progress and a member of the public leaps to the defense of those people in trouble? Like, in terms of a police officer's perspective, how complicated is that?
It's very, very complicated. But I'm going to use a word that I'm... fairly excited about using. And the word is confluence. Okay?
Okay.
So a confluence means where two... It's generally used to talk about rivers, but it has been sort of morphed into the ability to be used in the English diction as the meeting of two events.
Yeah.
And what we have here is an extraordinary... sort of like some unrelated things happen. So let's just say initially that there is a guy Mm-hmm. And we will call him Kai, which rhymes with Guy. He's hitchhiking. A car pulls over. He accepts a lift from a particularly large gentleman, described as being 270 pounds, because the Americans have not flipped to, and they probably never will, to the metric system. But let's just say that that equates to around about 140 kilos. So for us here in Australia, at least, we are beginning to imagine a male person who's very large, very tall, very strong. Now, Kai, who, to say that he's a stoner, is an understatement. And, you know, he was always sort of smoking joints. He gets into the car and he either lights up or he has a joint, and then he passes the joint to the driver, which is a very interesting point that we hopefully will touch on later in the story, because later on when they interview a particular person, you may recall the band member who had an immaculate combi, who was completely lucid, well-spoken, highly together and very, very believable. And he puts the cat amongst the pigeons later on. So if we can sort of, without sort of bending time too much, say that Kai passes the joint, which may or may not have just had marijuana in it, and the driver, you know, they're sort of smoking dope as they're sort of traveling through this town, then Kai makes a, well, he makes an admission later on, not so much an admission, but he's saying, and I think this is quite important, that this particular driver makes certain admissions about having basically raped a 14-year-old in the Caribbean. That's supposedly part of the conversation. And then all of a sudden, the driver says to Kai that he's actually, I am Jesus. And I can actually do anything. In fact, if I, for example, drive through that, there's a truck parked over there with, you know, this black worker, I can actually just pass through and nothing will happen. So now I don't know what Kai would have been thinking at this particular juncture, having just met this guy, and clearly they're probably both stoned. It would be very weird to be a hitchhiker all of a sudden in this situation, as you begin to, or the driver begins to drive towards this black sort of telecommunications worker, and he's heading to right towards him, and he basically smashes into this black guy, pins him between the front of the driver's vehicle that Kai is in and a council work truck. The driver just sits there. Guy pinned, clearly you can see the guy at the front of the sort of front of the car. He must have been in the most extraordinary agony, because as it was revealed later, the worker had broken both legs, which would be, and if you're standing up, based on the crime scene photos that I've seen, it would have been both his femurs, which are the strongest bones in the body. Okay. Indescribable pain, couldn't move. Kai gets out of the car. So I guess if you're sort of stoned, and then this, because you want, if you get stoned, you want it to be a really sort of zen, cool, really cool experience. All of a sudden, you know, because your senses are incredibly heightened, to have witnessed this through the windscreen would have been fucking scary.
Mm-hmm.
And then people begin to sort of run to help, and people obviously called the police. Then this woman, this sort of one of the people that's run to sort of assist the person pinned by this motor vehicle, all of a sudden the driver, this 140 kilo behemoth, gets out of the car. He then wraps his arms around this woman and starts to basically give her a bear hug and choke the life out of her.
Mm-hmm.
Kai, as he's known at this stage, he then, this is the part of the story that begins to become just slightly troubling for me. He's carrying a hatchet, or I guess we'd call that a sort of perhaps a tomahawk or a small axe in his backpack.
Yep.
And he then goes up to this huge guy who's basically choking this woman out with the bear hug, so she can't breathe. He then, with the hatchet, he then starts to deliver some pretty hardcore, because I've seen the photographs of the injuries, he starts to strike. Now, the first two or three strikes to this gentleman's head are with the blunt end. In other words, opposite to the blade.
Yeah.
And he drives with great force. But then he flips the weapon to the sharp side. And then he begins to continually drive down right on top of his head, right through all the skin, into the bone of the skull. And also, at this juncture, the big guy must have let go, because what I've seen also is that he had defensive wounds. Have you seen those,
yes,
Paul?
I've seen the photos. I've seen the footage. It's, yeah, pretty serious.
Serious stuff.
Injuries. Yeah.
And then things start to go, well, maybe you'd like to take it from here, Paul.
Well, look, Kai, as he's referring to himself, the claim there is that you know, he was trying to save the woman's life. He's got the hatchet out. And then what happens is basically there is a local sports reporter who is sent by his TV network to come down and cover this traffic accident. And people are sort of, you know, talking about this hitchhiker who, you know, came by and saved the day. And then as the guy is doing the little vox pop to the studio, the hitchhiker, Kai, walks into shot. And then he gets over and does an interview with this reporter, at which point, I mean, this is where the virality of the video comes in. He starts kind of telling the story of how he rescued these people. The video was popped online on precisely February 2nd, 2013, by this reporter, Jessup Reisbeck, I think is his name. And it's within days, it had millions of views, basically.
It
went absolutely huge. Mm. I mean, for me, the problem here is that, look, it's a pretty violent thing to do. The second I saw the viral video, I went, wait, is this for real? Are we actually celebrating a guy hitting another guy with an axe? I mean, I know, don't get me wrong, I know the circumstances are exceptional, but it struck me as an extremely violent thing to happen.
Paul, listen, a very important part to this sort of initial part of this story, I feel these are the sort of things in these stories where you need to really go through all the evidence from many, many different perspectives very thoroughly. And it's very important to recall Kai's first words to the reporter.
Mm-hmm.
And those words were that, and I'm going to sort of summarize what he said, but he basically says to the... He doesn't say it to the reporter. He looks into the camera. It's like he's looking at you, the people, and he says, basically, we've all done bad things in our lives, but we all need to be forgiven. So he's setting the interview up, which immediately makes me think, and of course, I've had this confirmed over and over again with the research that I've done, is that this gentleman, Kai, is very, very intelligent. And I truly believe, and I'm probably jumping the gun a little bit, but I would like to say from the outset that I believe what we're dealing with, or what the people were dealing with on that day, was a true psychopath.
Yeah, I think part of my problem here is that the documentary sort of goes a bit softball in this area, because there are so many red flags on this guy.
So I mean,
the second he walks up to the camera, it's funny watching the reporter and, you know, the producer of the Kardashians and guys from the Jimmy Kimmel show, you know, talent scouts, going, oh man, he just had something about him. I'm like, yeah, he did. He was nuts.
He was scary.
The first thing he says is, yeah, before I say anything else, I want to say, no matter what you've done, you deserve respect. And from that, they sort of intimate that this guy is just some wild, fun, freewheeling hippie superhero. But the second he starts talking, I go, this guy has some real issues. And the fact that he is reenacting an axe-wielding attack in public, It seems to me, well, first of all, we find out later on that he has a bit of a history of being involved in violent stuff and his upbringing is extremely intense. But from there, the documentary sort of, it charts his very rapid and very strange climb towards being famous. And the peak of that is the Jimmy Kimmel Show. But on the way to getting onto that show, it seems like people keep ignoring these red flags, right? Mm. They keep ignoring the things he's doing, which are clear signifiers of the fact that he is deeply unstable and quite dangerous.
Mm. Well, he somehow or other, he gets invited to this sort of a gig in this town. And he wants to, I don't know how it came about, but he ends up sort of going on stage with a band, but they interview the member of the band, the lead singer, who was, you know, if you want to sort of say that crazy's one and completely normal's 10, this guy was a clear 10.
Now, we're clearly talking to this band leader from this small band, and it seemed to me like, you know, the music things are kind of a side hustle, and he was at his day job being interviewed about this thing that had happened back in like 2013. And so it was interesting hearing his perspective, certainly. By the way, this live gig story happens after Jimmy Kimmel, but everything going up to Jimmy Kimmel is just basically TV producers ignoring the fact that this guy is...
I found it very, very troubling.
The public urination and the weird outbursts.
Yes, but not only that, Paul, one of the most troubling aspects of this entire story is how these shows like Jimmy Kimmel and, dare I say it, look, I'll be struck down, but things like the Kardashians, it's not so much the show, it's sort of this desperation, this clamoring for this sort of, they see this as a moment in time where clearly this YouTube video of the interview, it was getting millions.
Yeah.
Not thousands, not tens or hundreds of thousands. It was getting millions and millions of hits with a lot of comments. A lot of people were coming in and saying he's sort of, you know, the archangel, he's the savior, he's taken sort of public security back into the hands of the public, which is kind of, in a way, it's a form of vigilantism, which is incredibly dangerous. And the police, the police they interview during this documentary, they saw through. I mean, that policeman in uniform, Paul, who's sort of, you know, front and center in the interview, he's ex-homicide. Okay?
Yeah,
he's an ex-homicide detective. That he was very, very, he found it very troubling.
I have a question about that, by the way.
Mm.
How do you go from homicide to working in uniform?
Easily.
Would he have done something to be demoted?
No, not a chance. No, he would have gone up in rank. So it happens a lot. It happens in the New South Wales Police Force, where you might be a detective senior constable. You may even become a detective sergeant. And then you want to become, for example, a detective inspector in a police force. There are so few detective inspectors. So what you do is you think, hang on a sec, I don't want to stay, okay, yeah, it's great being a detective, it's great having that rank, but I want to go through the ranks to earn more and more and more money so that when I retire, I get a massive, you know, retirement fund.
Okay.
So what you do is you need to go back into the pool of you know, that has the resources and the ranks. So basically what you do is you forego your detective plainclothes status. You become a uniformed sergeant working, for example, at a police station in general duties. But then there are a lot more vacancies for, you know, uniformed inspectors than detective inspectors.
Right.
So you allow yourself a greater pool to be promoted. And you know what? Maybe he just had enough of homicide. It's certainly not a backward step.
Okay, but look, that aside, I'm very curious just quickly about the fact that I was trying to figure out why this whole thing happened, and obviously the documentary spends a bit of time delving into Kai's past. First of all, his actual name is not Kai, and they finally get in touch with his cousin, I think.
Yeah.
And they get in touch with his mother.
Mm.
Because they start showing, and the red flag thing is a real, real big problem for me, because they start later on in the doco showing footage that the reporter says, yeah, we couldn't use all of it because he started saying some pretty dark stuff.
Hmm.
And it cuts to Kai talking about being locked basically in a cage without any light and being pretty much tortured as a kid.
Hmm.
Then the documentary cuts across to the cousin and the mother, who sort of hand wave it away a little bit, and the doco doesn't press them at all.
No, I kind of agree and disagree, Paul, because at that point, because Christine and I both watched the doco, and Christine, ex-police officer, current mother of three, woman of great wisdom, I said to Christine, we paused the video after they'd interviewed the cousin and the mother.
Okay.
And I said to Christine, what do you think? And there were the words of great wisdom. And Christine said to me that he would have been an incredibly difficult child to handle. Christine was not saying that, you know, things were not portrayed by, as per Kai said.
Yeah.
I don't believe that things were as bad as Kai said. I do believe that the mother would have had the most terrible time.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
With an incredibly troubled child, I think what she was saying, this is how my take on sort of putting a black curtain over the window, was to stop him from getting up incredibly early, to at least continue some semblance of the child being able to think that it was still nighttime.
Okay.
Now, you might see, or some might see, that as being rather sort of offhandish and simplistic. I have thought about this a lot. And, you know, I think it's, without sort of using a very sort of common sort of euphemism, I think it's, the truth lies somewhere in the middle.
Okay, yeah.
I think it's fair to say, I think Caleb, what the fuck? That's his real name, by the way, listeners. But
it does come out in the doco. So yeah.
So his real name is Caleb Lawrence McGilvray or Gilvery. But I think it's fair to say he is a liar, and he says some things that are troubling. But amongst all this, I mean, it's interesting that he did talk about being locked in his room and the windows were blackened, because the cousin clearly, you know, backed that up by saying that occasionally he would from the outside, you could see that Caleb's room was, in fact, you know, had a sort of a black cloth over the window.
Yeah.
But the mother, I mean, it's difficult to judge people. I mean, the mother said she'd be more than happy to visit her son, and, you know, the son is obviously very traumatized by his past, but for me, the jury's out, Paul. What do you think about his upbringing?
I don't know, because the documentary doesn't give me enough to go on. It talks to two people who have no distance from it, and it's very easy for them to tell their side of events, and because they're not interviewing Kai, no, you know, but another, the doco maker kind of takes a really odd, I think a sort of weirdly passive backseat in terms of what she chooses to address. But the real core of this doco, in terms of the reason it's a true crime documentary, is because on May the 16th, 2013, McGilvery was arrested for murder. There was a attorney named Joseph Galfi. He was an old guy, and basically he was found dead in his home, savagely murdered. I mean, really, someone really went to town on the guy. And then the cops found footage from a local railway station of this attorney buying a ticket for somebody. And when they finally kind of got a better angle, they realized it was actually Kai. So Kai had been involved with this guy in some way. And underneath the laptop in the living room of the murder victim's house was a piece of paper with Kai's name on it and his number.
That was actually, they also found in the room, the train ticket.
Gotcha.
Okay. So, but listen, let's just go back to the attorney. What are your impressions or opinions? Do you have any sort of, what did you think about when you saw the attorney and found out, you know, how they met? And did you sort of come to any conclusions?
Nothing concrete, because again, the documentary allows people to make a lot of very big claims and then doesn't really dig into them very much. I got to say, parenthetically at this point, I did not think this was a very well-made documentary, but it did draw my attention and your attention to a very interesting case and also a really interesting sort of moral quandary, in that when is it okay to give people a platform, and at what point do you bear the burden of responsibility? Because the fact is, if it's entirely possible that if these people didn't make him famous, this attorney wouldn't have ended up dead. Who knows?
I have to totally disagree with you, Paul.
Really? Okay.
100%. I believe that the lawyer was 100% gay, and he was on the prowl.
Okay.
In Times Square, New York. And I believe that Caleb, this was certainly not the first time he had engaged in, because he was basically a free spirit. He was homeless. He had no income. He had no passport, no social security number. He had nothing. He was completely off the radar, which, you know, he used that to his advantage. But I believe that this elderly gentleman basically picked Caleb up.
Okay.
And Caleb would have definitely known, because it would not have been the first time. This is my hypothesis based on the information that I've been able to glean. And he went back to the attorney's house. Now, the attorney was in his mid to late 70s. He had a stint, which is sort of something in the heart that, you know, he had heart problems. And I guess at this junction, we might be able to then hypothesize, okay, was the attorney doing this out of the kindness and generosity? Did he just go and pick up homeless guys and bring them back to his house? I think that is unusual and odd in the extreme. Very, very trusting to do that. Mm-hmm. So we know that Caleb had the ability to charm. You can't deny that there was something about him. And I guess it's that X factor, perhaps, that the media became sort of very, very quickly in this sort of incredible sort of, it became very, very competitive. All the networks, all of the people who are involved in just sort of looking for the next great thing, they know that this thing probably only has a very, very short sort of shelf life.
Yeah.
And that's why it became this frenzied, almost mad, almost desperate, unthought of screw the consequences, which was very apparent when he went on that Jimmy Kimmel show. It was cringeworthy and quite frankly scary.
I will say that Kimmel, I mean, God, it's really hard to deal with an unstable interview. Oh,
I mean, look, he was supposed to come in and they have this mock car and this sort of just, and then he's supposed to come in through the other door. It's a bit like, you know, when Jerry Seinfeld, you know, interviews famous people in the car and they hop in and they chat. But no, this fucking psycho Kai, he jumps over the back of the car and basically just, and he's on the roof and it's just, he's out of control.
Yeah, it's intense.
And it's fucking scary. Yep. But the thing about Caleb is that he had the ability to switch. And if you watch it, it's very interesting how he can switch. When he's in custody later on, he is so lucid. He is so smart. He is a really... I reckon his IQ would be between 140 and 160.
I just think that... Anybody who saw him and ignored red flags is culpable to a degree.
I agree. But you know what? My gut feeling is that he went back to this gentleman's house. Do you recall what he says to the police when he gets arrested? He says he woke up, he walked to the mirror. Remember this? This is on the first night, by the way. This is one of the big chinks in the armor. He says he wakes up, he goes to the mirror and he sees cum dripping from the side of his mouth. Okay, that's the first night he spent with the guy. What happens is they then go back at some point during that day and they end up on the railway station. Kai's going to go wherever. The elderly gentleman gets a ticket from the vending machine on the railway station. He gives it to Kai. What happens then is that Caleb goes back to his house, spends a second night. And during the record of interview, the police are saying, why, if you were so scared or you were so traumatized, you say that, you've woken up with his jism all over your face. Why do you then... And then they hug each other on the railway station. That does not say to the police officers during the record of interview, this is someone you were scared of. You get the ticket, you then decide to go. You go back to his house, and then you allege that you wake up and there's this sort of half-naked man on top of you. This is a guy going on 80 years of age, for God's sake.
Yeah.
And he says that, I became enraged and he was attacking me. But then, of course, the post-mortem results, Paul. They don't lie. And the injuries sustained to the elderly gentleman... Mm-hmm. were so horrendous. And a fact that came out of this story that I found particularly interesting, we made mention of the guy that was crushed between the car and the truck, broke both his femurs, the strongest bones in the body. Can you guess what the second strongest bone in the body is?
No, go on.
The bones around the eye socket.
Right.
Isn't that interesting? To protect. And, isn't that amazing? Yeah. They were both shattered. The injuries, he had one of his ears was virtually just hanging by a thread. And so all these, and he'd been stomped on. It is a particularly violent, he's basically been killed by Caleb using his own body. His fists, his feet. It's
indicative of the kind of violence. I mean, when you look at the hatchet murder and the kind of blasé nature of his reenactment of it, and then they cut to some footage of him earlier on in his life where he says he basically beat a guy's teeth out of his mouth.
That's right.
And then he holds up his hand and shows the scars where the teeth were dug into his hand. This is a violent person. So what strikes me as very odd is the fact that the internet... There's still so much fundraising going for this Kai's legal fees because people are going, he's been taken advantage of, the cops have been hiding evidence. I mean, when Kai is talking, I mean, he doesn't seem to be very connected online because at that point he claims to be, basically homeless. So he doesn't seem to be a person with a very big social media presence, although the producers do later on find that he's got a Facebook profile. But he's espousing the sort of bullshit conspiracy theory nutjob stuff that, the most dangerous, toxic people online now are espousing, you know, chemtrails and conspiracy theories and all this other crap. And so it paints a picture of a violent, unstable person with really dangerous belief systems. So I don't understand why, I'm sorry, I don't understand why people are siding with the guy, except for the fact that he was clearly sort of set up to fail, right? I mean, they did elevate him to a status level and a fame level that was just, it's not okay.
Look, I believe that, fame aside,
yeah,
I believe he would have gone on to kill, irrespective. That's, and I have no doubt. I don't, it's not a 99% thing. I'm 100% positive. And I believe that if you could get this gentleman, Caleb Lawrence McGilvery, to be very, very honest, I've seen two interviews of him being interviewed in jail. Mm-hmm. And, you know, after the offence, after the horrendous crime, we need to remember, listeners, that he changed his appearance dramatically. He had his hair cut radically. I'm of the opinion that part of his cool, you know, opt-out, sort of carefree image, the hair was a very, very important part of that, as was, you know, the bandana. To commit an atrocious, violent, unspeakable, gross, sort of fucking just beat the fuck out of an old man, okay? Mm. And then to change your identity, to me, indicates A, you're smart, B, guilt, C, let me get the fuck out of here, which he did. And he was, they just couldn't track him down. It was some really interesting work done by police forces on either side, east and west coast of America, where they had this thing about, oh, this guy is, you know, because they had a photograph, you know, the footage at the railway station.
Yeah.
And it's clearly Caleb.
Yeah.
Then Caleb goes underground, and that's the thing about someone who's transient, who is truly off the grid. And how on earth do you track him down? And it's thank you very much to the media and his high profile that he was so recognizable.
Yeah.
That's how, in a coffee shop, a few weeks later, a girl who was working in the coffee shop, she sees, because what Caleb had also done, which I found, you know, slightly odd, is that he got a face tattoo.
Yeah, on his, I think his left-hand side. It was up his neck and cheek.
Yeah, and
right?
It's massive, and it's not the sort of thing you can hide. And this girl saw him, and the police came, and they knew he was sort of transient, and they made their way to, funnily enough, the Greyhound bus station in this particular town, and sure enough, he was sitting there. Yep. The rest's history.
Yep.
He goes before the court.
Yep.
It's a 5-week trial, and the judge, in summing up, described him basically as a very cold and calculating, violent, aggressive, fucking, they don't use the word psychopath. I'd love to, you know, be able to get into the you know, the psychiatric reports. But I'd love to do a documentary, or see a documentary, where you go back to his hometown, and I would like to see the teachers interviewed, and just to get a sort of a more, you know, sort of holistic sort of view, or, you know, as to how and, you know, what happened to him in his life. But as the judge said, I mean, he's been sentenced to 57 years in jail.
Yeah.
But in relation to parole, etc., the judge also said that by the time you get out of jail, you will still be younger than your victim. And, you know, cold, sobering words. And I think if people do take that risk of inviting people back to their houses, no matter how, you know, no matter for what reason, you know, even coming from a place of goodness and kindness, I think you need to be really, really cautious about, you know, letting yourself. And, you know, if this crime had not happened, I believe in my heart that at some point in Caleb's future, something like this would probably have happened. Because during the interviews, you can see him switch. And when he's being interviewed in jail, you know, the interviewer sort of says, he asked him a question about, you know, who am I talking to? Is it Caleb the free spirit, or is it Caleb the murderer? And it's just, you just see this guy. He switches.
Yeah.
And it's fucking scary.
I'm watching this footage from back when he was sort of getting internet famous, and from the second he appeared on camera, I knew something was very wrong. And I think possibly either the people who were trying to capitalize on him and, you know, get him famous and get themselves famous in the process, either they saw those red flags and ignored them, or they didn't see them, which is a damning indictment of just the level of people that they were used to dealing with anyway. Because the fact is, if you are a producer for the Kardashians, I guess your idea of what is normal, what is talent, and what is doable in terms of a television context is slightly off anyway. But this guy was clearly off his rocker. I mean, he was very unstable. Also, I think it was rotten from the word dot, and I was very confused watching the documentary because I guess I wasn't one of those people who were into the meme at the time. I didn't get it. They showed a bunch of auto-tuned videos and memes and stuff, and I am a meme lord. I love this stuff, but this is a guy who attacked somebody with a hatchet.
Hmm.
This is that, like, that's it. That is not a normal thing to do. It's not, I mean, he's not exactly Batman. So I guess the whole thing left me feeling a little bit confused and a little bit sad.
Hmm.
The guy's still in prison. Apparently, by all accounts, he's been interviewed online and he's pretty pissed that he's not making any money off this, which I guess, you know, highlights his priorities. But it's, I don't know. I'm sure listeners are going to have very different opinions. I'm sure there's quite a few listeners who think he's innocent and maybe even have been donating to his legal fund. I don't know, but this is just how I feel.
It's fascinating, Paul. It's an interesting story, and thank you very much for bringing it to my attention. I thought it's, you know, it's good. It's got legs, and I think it's a great way to start the new year.
I agree. I will say that Tegan and I have been discussing this, and the single best true crime thing ever to be committed to screen on Netflix is called Don't Fuck with Cats. I would urge you all to watch it. Dad, I want you and Mum to watch Don't Fuck with Cats. Don't look up what it's about. Don't look up the premise. Just watch the first episode of this show. I think it's like a 5-part miniseries. It's been out for years. It's utterly insane, and it's completely worth watching. And again, I didn't know what this documentary was about, what the Hatchet documentary was about, but the title kind of explains it, and the trailer gives it away. The best thing you can do with Don't Fuck with Cats is just look it up, don't read about it, and just watch it, and then report back to me and tell me what you think.
Cool.
Yeah. Anyway, we'd love to hear your thoughts on this very strange case and what you thought of this documentary and where you think the responsibility lies in terms of people who cover these stories, because obviously this is an area that we, you know, we sort of dabble in. So head across to our Facebook page and our discussion page and have a bit of a chat with us. I should say it's very, very good to be back on the airwaves with all of you. We're going to be back twice a week as per usual. Regularly scheduled programming has completely recommenced, so make sure you keep listening. Thank you so much for hanging out with us all throughout the holiday period. We're really happy to be back. And we will see you later this week for an episode of Loose Ends. Bye, everyone.
Cheerio.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.